You are listening to Larry Connors, USA.
You want answers?
I think I'm entitled.
You want answers?
I want the truth!
You can't handle the truth!
This is Larry Connors, USA. Larry Connors, USA. Larry Connors, USA, news and commentary.
June the 17th, 2020, for 8 years under the Obama administration, there were numerous reports of police brutality, excessive force, sometimes leading to the death of a suspect, often a white officer, a black suspect, for 8 years, and the Democrats made no move to come up with police reform legislation. Senate Republicans are now introducing legislation and pointing out that for 8 years you had your chance, so don't be lecturing us on how to do it. Senator Tim Scott, the lone African-American GOP senator, is spearheading this legislation in the wake of George Floyd's death, obviously. And yet here come the Democrats again being critical. Senate Democrat leader Chuck Schumer, it's ineffective. It's not going to be enough. We need significant improvement. And also pointed out, we've only had the bill a few hours. We're reviewing it, but it's clear this does not rise to the moment. They could have written that speech, and I have no doubt they did even before they got a copy of Senator Tim Scott's bill. Senator Tim Scott had said, Democrats should not be demonizing progress simply because they don't like President Trump. He said any progress that helps the minority community under this administration, the Democrats want to say it's not good, it's not enough, it's ineffective, and bad, bad, bad. I point out again, for 8 years, what were the Democrats doing? Senator Scott said it's this administration, President Trump, that reversed the damages done by the 1994 crime bill with the First Step Act. Don't let the facts interfere with a good story in the view of the leftists. Police reform is coming, and it's going to be in different ways. And in New York, the New York City mayor says all internal New York Police Department trial decisions must be published online going forward. He said that we plan now on releasing information for about 1,100 pending cases in July. That would include names, charges, hearing dates, and resolutions. Again, it's an effort to be transparent, make information available online. I do want them to be very careful, though, as to what kind of personal information about the officer is put out. Even if the officer is found innocent, they may become a target. And if their address and information is there, it's not going to help things. It's going to accelerate some problems, I believe. In the meantime, probably in 2 hours from now, the Atlanta District Attorney in Fulton County will announce charges in the fatal police shooting of 27-year-old Rashard Brooks, the one shot to death at the Wendy's over the weekend. You know, of course, the Minneapolis police station was set fire after police abandoned the station. And, of course, there's been constant complaint and bickering back and forth and denial who ordered the police station to be abandoned. The police chief said, I didn't. In fact, I told my officers, you stood on the line protecting the building. You were the victim of things spit at you, thrown at you, racial slurs aimed at you. And now we're telling you to pack up and let them have it. And, of course, then it was broken into, burned, caught fire. I'm sorry, I mixed up the Seattle police chief with the Minneapolis case. The Seattle police chief was the one saying that I stood in line and now I regret that it happened. Minneapolis, it happened May 28th, of course. And they have arrested a 22-year-old suspect. They already had one, a 23-year-old. And they say he's admitted being in the building, stealing property, starting the fire. And when they searched his residence, they found a riot helmet, a 9mm pistol magazine, police radio, police issue overdose kit. Now, when it comes to Seattle, the mayor says Seattle police officers will only enter that Capitol Hill organized protest area for significant life-saving issues. Call 911. We'll see how fast they can get in, if they can get past the barriers and get in time. So would you like to have a 51st state? There will be a vote next week on the House floor presented by House Majority Leader Steny Hoyer to admit our 51st state, Washington, D.C. Hoyer said, we're the only nation, free nation in the world, whose capital does not have voting members of their parliament. So they want to give D.C. its own statehood. There's going to be another battle. Watch and see how that one plays out.
Larry Connors, USA, news and commentary.
Tom Wellington and his staff at Wellington Environmental have certainly been busy over the last several weeks, making sure businesses and hospitals and nursing homes are clear of COVID-19. As you begin to reopen, try to restart your business, I would encourage you to contact Wellington Environmental. I'll give you a phone number in a moment. They can come in and assess the situation at a very reasonable cost and make sure your facility is clear of COVID-19. And even after you're open, if something comes up and you're not sure, you want to contact Wellington Environmental. And not only for COVID-19, for any other threat, mold, any toxic situation. Wellington Environmental, 314-644-4930. 644-4930. In business for 30 years, you know they're doing it right. Be well with Wellington Environmental. My sponsors keep this program on the air, so my thanks to John Beal Roofing, covering homes and businesses throughout the Midwest. Best quality, lowest price. So when you need a roof, remember this sponsor for this program, John Beal Roofing. 1-800-NEW-ROOF. 1-800-NEW-ROOF.
This is Larry Connors USA.
Larry Connors USA.
You had 8 years. No attempts to ban chokeholds. No attempts to do any of the things that we all agree we need to do now. So if you want to fight about that, let's fight. If you want to admit that the country needs to move on together, let's do it.
That is Senator Lindsey Graham, Republican of South Carolina, responding after his fellow senator from South Carolina, Republican Tim Scott, introduced his bill for police reform. And yet immediately, it was under attack by the left. Some of this legislation inside the package that Senator Scott has put on the table includes efforts to reach across the aisle to Democrats in several ways. One long-sought measure to make lynching a federal hate crime. Another to launch a study of the social status of black men and boys. House Speaker Nancy Pelosi has been asking for that repeatedly. It would also beef up requirements for law enforcement to compile use of force reports. And it does focus on ending chokeholds by encouraging agencies to do away with that practice or risk losing federal funding. Many big city departments have already stopped that usage. So there are a lot of things inside this bill that could help minority communities in particular when it comes to dealing with police, and it could help police agencies do the same. But too many times lately, you're basically said, well, if you support police reform, then you're anti-cop. Or if you're for cop, obviously you don't want anything changed. That's a pretty, I think, stupid approach to things. And yet it exists. Senator Tim Scott, a black man from South Carolina, who's already been stopped himself at least 7 different times, DWB, driving while black, one recently because he didn't signal his turn signal early enough for the officer that decided, I'm going to pull him over. But Senator Scott says you do not have to be forced into this side or that side.
Too often we're having a discussion in this nation about, are you supporting the law enforcement community or are you supporting communities of color? This is a false binary choice. The answer to the question of which side do you support, it's I support America. And if you support America, you support restoring the confidence that communities of color have in institutions of authority. If you support America, that means you know that the overwhelming number of officers in this nation want to do their job, go home to their family. It is not a binary choice.
It is not. And yet many will feel they're pressured into that position. Senator Graham, who you heard as we began this segment, saying for 8 years you Democrats were in control. President Obama, Justice Department run by Eric Holder and others that he put in place, Loretta Lynch, and you didn't do anything about any of this reform at that point. President Trump has stepped forward and done it by executive order yesterday, and now Senator Tim Scott is coming up with a proposal to go the extra distance. And Senator Graham makes a point that's very clear. Not all Democrats are listening to the drumbeat of Senator Chuck Schumer when he says this doesn't rise to the moment.
After the hearing, I had multiple Democratic colleagues come up to me and say, let's try to reconcile our differences. To the American people, after the hearing, I am more hopeful than I was before the hearing that there's going to be a genuine effort to bring reform to a problem that's been going on well before President Obama. And if we don't do something about it, it's going to go on well past President Trump.
We've got to have reform. Police unions are normally the basic barrier between firing a police officer for something done wrong and that should have been justifiable, but they stand in the way. Sometimes they're right. Sometimes they're abusing that. Sometimes they're just standing with the blue to stand with the blue. And that happens inside the ranks as well. I have a lot of police friends, a lot of them. And they'll be the first to admit it's hard to cross that blue line if a fellow officer has done something wrong. Unless it's a felony type of event, you really don't want to get involved in reporting it. You just do your thing. Because then if you're out on the street and you need backup, they or their friends might not show up on time. It's as real to them as it is for the minority community to believe that I will be abused by police, even if it's not a fact, it's a perception. Well, the National Fraternal Order of Police, the largest law enforcement union, praising President Trump's order that he issued yesterday. The executive order that basically insists we get more training and we cut funding, federal funding, if they are not following proper best police standards. The executive order to uphold clear, high policing standards, promoting accountability in law enforcement, and helping equip police officers for constructive community engagement. The National Fraternal Order of Police praising all of that, stating, it strikes a great balance between the vital need for public and officer safety and the equally vital need for lasting, meaningful, enforceable police reform. All right, now let's turn again to Senator Tim Scott's proposal. And part of it deals with data that would help not only define failings, but also define areas that we need to beef up and get stronger.
We have to have the right information so that we can direct our resources as a federal government to making sure that the outcomes lead to safer officers and safer suspects in the instances of challenges. that data collection or the information is around making sure that when serious bodily injury occurs or death, that all that information is reported to the FBI. Today, only 40% of the departments report that information to the FBI. We want all that information. Once we have the information, we can then turn to the training that is necessary to de-escalate situations. The duty to intervene, not standing there watching an officer with his knee on the neck, but intervening in those situations. We can train our officers better. We can find ways and mechanisms to de-escalate the situation. So we spend a lot of time in the training aspect using the resources of our grants to reduce the situations and violence in those situations. And then finally, we look at officer misconduct and the necessity of transparency. We believe that the preservation of records on the local level so that departments within the states have a chance to see almost like a reference check what the past history of complaints have been against that officer.
And that would be critical for a police department before they hire someone. Good police departments don't want to hire someone that has a bad record and no one ever referred that information to that hiring department. And good officers on that department, they don't want somebody coming in from another sector, another department, another state, city, whatever, that has a bad history and it would immediately taint their force. Police unions become part of that stand, both protecting the officers that are doing the good job, but then also protecting officers that are accused of something. Listen, we have a justice system in this nation where you do, I don't care if you're guilty as sin for whatever crime you're being charged, you still get the right of a trial and get a hearing, and then they're going to have to convict you by law. They can't just do it because of feeling. They got to do it properly. Or you get, quote, a technical way to get out. Well, they didn't do it properly. And it's incensing and upsetting to many of us when something like that happens. But that's the law. But police unions, they are now facing some harsh scrutiny in the wake of the George Floyd death. And they are trying to fight back a little bit because they feel that they are being demonized. The other day, Michael O'Meara, the president of the New York State Association of the Police Benevolent Association, we played part of his remarks the other day where he said, basically, stop treating us like animals and thugs. Start treating us with some respect. He's talking about the officers in general, but that also refers to the union. He said, you can't argue actions of one bad officer to stain the badge of good officers who protect and serve their communities. And he's absolutely correct. Police unions have a duty and a job to their members, but they also have it to the community. And if we don't have transparency and break down some of these barriers, we're going to continue to see cases where officers, like in the George Floyd case, had, what, 18 complaints against him, and two had lettered to letters of reprimand. We don't know the details of the others. And yes, many times somebody would just make a complaint against police officers just because they can and put the onus on the officer when the officer is absolutely doing the correct job. But there is acceptance and understanding the other side of the story. In 2017, Washington Post did an investigation finding out how hard it is to make the firing of a police officer stick, pointing out that since 2006, the nation's largest police departments firing at least 1,800 officers for misconduct, but more than 450 were reinstated after appeals required by union contracts. In other words, the police chief could not get rid of them. The union came in and backed them up and said, you're not going to be able to fire this guy, even though they'd been fired for misconduct. They got reinstated, 450 of them. Minnesota Star Tribune did a study in 2017, found that 500 current or former licensed officers were convicted of at least one crime since 1995. 75% of all the officers convicted never disciplined. Police unions stepping forward to defend the officers, and the police chief can't fire them. But union leaders again say, don't make us a scapegoat for these problems. We have no power in hiring, training, or firing officers. That's all left to the administration. But yes, we'll fight for the union members' rights. Even if they're guilty, they got to do something. They have to do it properly, as I said a moment ago. The president of the Houston Police Union, vice president of the National Fraternal Order of Police, said there's nothing in union contracts that prevents a district attorney from criminally charging a police officer. He said for officers who are disciplined, union contracts allow for just one appeal to a third-party arbitrator, which he says, I think that's reasonable. He said, when you look at criminals, they get 7 or 8 appeals on their cases. We get one appeal that's binding. That is a fact you should keep in mind as well. Criminals getting a lot freer hand and numerous appeals, while the officer could lose his or her job over one incident. And it might not be a major incident, but if it violates policy or whatever is determined, if they can make it stick, they will. And if there's not a union to protect the officer from just being thrown out because of someone else's issue, even a personal issue, then they don't have protection they should have. But true police reform should be welcomed by every officer, every community. Not as a way to go charging in and disbanding police, but to making their job better and safer for them as well, and upholding those who do the right job. We'll take a break, come back, tell you more about all the chaos in Seattle. Please stand by.
You can connect with Larry on Twitter at LarryConnorsUSA.
Red Fitness Lounge in Clayton sponsors this segment. Red Fitness Lounge, redefining exercise, changing how you think and look at fitness, one client at a time. I'll see you at Red Fitness Lounge. Get details at redfitnesslounge.com. redfitnesslounge.com.
Then the sheriff came around in the middle of the night, heard mama crying that something wouldn't right. He's headed down to Knoxville with a weekly load. Smell of whiskey burning down Copperhead Road.
This is Larry Connors USA.
Larry Connors USA.
The mayor of Seattle says there have been some inaccurate, misleading depictions of the CHOP area, the Capitol Hill organized protest, which was originally labeled CHAZ, the Capitol Hill Autonomous Zone. They never could get the name right. Now they change it again, and they continue to say, we're doing this because, well, one, we want to, and the city is allowing them to do it. Police abandoned a police district headquarters in that area. And the Seattle police chief said, I didn't make the decision for us to give up the police station. The mayor says, I didn't make the decision, so who the heck made that decision? I guess nobody did. And now what we have is the city actually helping build additional barriers around the area. Now, they say they're doing it for safety reasons. They're saying we're trying to remove some of these temporary roadblocks set in place by protesters, and we're putting in concrete barriers, but we're also going to cap them with wood on top so they can spray paint them and do some of their artwork and so forth, and so that traffic can come and go easily, including emergency traffic. But when you get in emergency traffic, well, if you need police, the statement is now they will enter only on significant life safety issues, according to the mayor's office. An active shooter incident, an assault, a structure fire, significant medical emergency, heart attack, so forth. Any incidents that threaten a person's life safety. And the mayor continues to insist, we know that First Amendment activities can continue while also maintaining public safety, allowing access for residents and businesses who operate in the area. Well, there's a business the other day that was calling police saying, these guys are trying to break in and steal from us. We caught one of them. You need to come get him. And they were holding the guy captive waiting for police. Police never came. You know who did show up? about 100 protesters tearing down the fence demanding he be released. And the owners of the company just, they said, we detained him for a while, but police never arrived. We had to let him go because it's armed protesters breaking down the fence, swarming our lot. Later, the report from the police chief says, well, we did respond. We observed from a distance. What good did that do that business? Keep in mind when all this started, the Seattle mayor, again, trying to put the best on it, saying, you know, it's we might look at this like a summer of love. It's kind of like a street festival. So the other day, an MSNBC reporter is standing in the middle of this chop area, and he's saying, it's peaceful out here, generally. He said, and it looks like a street festival. And immediately a protester came up on camera and started shaming him. It's not a street festival. Do not say that. Shame on you for saying that. Learn right now, this is not a street festival. Well, that's what the mayor said. That's why she's willing to kind of let it happen. You just paint on the sidewalk, hold your poetry reading, sing together, whatever. And no, it's not. We're here for a greater cause. And when they begin to try to say, we got to move you out, the businesses, they got to be able to open and serve people beyond this area, get trucks in that won't come and make deliveries now, get folks in their homes safely protected, it could get violent. And I'd lay it at the feet of the Seattle mayor and the rest of them in charge. Aunt Jemima, is that racist? Stand by, please.
You can email Larry at LarryConnorsUSA@gmail.com. LarryConnorsUSA@gmail.com.
Hi, I'm local tax attorney Lance Drury, and I've represented hundreds of individuals and small businesses in disputes with the IRS. So if you've been contacted for past due tax debt or haven't filed taxes in a while, contact me, Lance Drury. And because each client's case is unique, we'll meet face-to-face and go over your tax situation in detail. Together, we'll develop a strategy to resolve your tax issues. I'm experienced, I know your rights, and I'll give you honest answers. Under my 8-point plan, my firm will file the necessary forms needed to resolve your issue with the IRS, and you won't have to worry about talking to their agents. I'll negotiate on your behalf to get you the lowest settlement allowed by law. At the Lance Drury Law Firm, we want to make sure that you're satisfied with the outcome. So call me now, tax resolution attorney Lance Drury, 314-238-7360, or go to LanceDrurylaw.com.
The choice of a lawyer is an important decision and should not be based solely upon advertisements.
This is Larry Connors, USA.
Larry Connors, USA.
So, do you prefer Aunt Jemima syrup or Mrs. Butterworth? Do you consider either or both racist stereotypes? Let's deal with Mrs. Butterworth first. As she poses, standing on the bottle, in the brown syrup inside, maybe she is multiracial or no color or what, but when you empty it, she's clear, obviously. But the point is, there was a real Mrs. Butterworth, by the way, and she passed away some time ago, but she was white. The Aunt Jemima brand has been built upon a black history. Many probably never considered anything about it being racist. But, of course, if you're not black, we don't see things like that sometimes, right? And even when we're told sometimes, well, I just never see it that way. I don't see it. And I don't know if all black Americans see it that way. But it's become an issue, has been an issue for some time. Now Quaker Oats says, I said Quaker, that owns the Aunt Jemima brand, is going to change it. They're going to drop Aunt Jemima because they're accepting that it is racial mischaracterization, And they're even going to add $5 million donated over the next 5 years to create meaningful, ongoing support and engagement in the black community. Well, that's nice. I'm glad they're doing that. What is the history of Aunt Jemima? There was a former slave named Nancy Green, first hired in 1890 to be the spokesperson and picture for the Aunt Jemima brand food products. And again, she was born into slavery in 1834 in Kentucky. And then she was discovered in Chicago. They were building it also off of something that already existed. Aunt Jemima was first introduced as a character in a minstrel show. Of course, that's some of the entertainment back in the 19th century. Comic skits and so forth, often blackface, normally performed by white people, playing the roles of black people as they portrayed them at that time. And yes, many times portraying blacks as dim-witted, lazy, easily frightened, superstitious, or happy-go-lucky. The inspiration for Aunt Jemima came specifically from the song, Old Aunt Jemima, written by Billy Kersant's 1875 song used on the minstrel circuit. Billy Kersant was a black performer. He wrote the song. It was based on a song at that time sung by slave hands. Old Aunt Jemima, performed by men in blackface as they began to have their minstrel shows. The identity of Nancy Green first was uncovered in the World's Columbian Exposition in 1893. So many were interested in the Aunt Jemima exhibit, police had to call in for crowd control. And Nancy Green, as, quote, Aunt Jemima, served pancakes to thousands. And everybody loved her warm personality, friendly demeanor, not to mention the cooking. And as a result, the Aunt Jemima brand got something like 50,000 orders for the pancake mix. Flour sales went up. She signed a lifetime contract to serve as a spokesperson, a living legend of the brand until she died in a car wreck in 1923. And then after that passing, and the brand was sold to Quaker Oats, Nancy Green was followed by Anna Robinson, her image. Then next, a Chicago blues singer and actress, Edith Wilson. She was the first Aunt Jemima to appear in television commercials. And after that, Ethel Ernestine Harper, a former school teacher and actress. The fourth Aunt Jemima, Rosie Hall, an advertising employee at Quaker Oats, till they realized they need a new Aunt Jemima. And Rosie Hall's gravesite is declared a historical landmark. And after that came Eileen Lewis, appearing in 1955 at the Aunt Jemima restaurant in Disneyland. The last woman known to appear as Aunt Jemima publicly, Ann Short Harrington. And she would make television spokesman appearances as a brand spokesman in the New York area. For many, especially in the original Aunt Jemima, with the scarf around her scalp and so forth, it was reminiscent of the mammy that was part of the South at the time. And the basic approach for many was a mammy, and I'm reading this, I want to give the attribution to this, this piece written by a New York writer, said the mammy pictured female household slaves as fat, middle-aged, dark-skinned, undesirable, happy to serve whites, always smiling. The ugly truth is they were thin, young, light-skinned, a daughter of rape. And also adding that the mammy was created by white Southerners to redeem relationship between black men and white men within slave society. And yes, we know slave owners often sexually exploited and abused female slaves. When the pancake mix came out in 1889, they originally were just going to call it a self-rising pancake flour and just go with that. But then one of them attended a minstrel show featuring the Aunt Jemima song I was discussing a moment ago and decided to use that and put it as part of the packaging plan. And all that eventually led to the Nancy Green, the woman born a slave in Kentucky in 1834. One of the aspects is a piece written by Black Excellence publication. The marketing plan was brilliant. They delivered customers something they'd always wanted but could never have, a real-life mammy. For years, not just recently, for years, members of the black community have complained about that and saying it's stereotyping, it's demeaning, and everything else. And again, if you're not a minority person, you don't get it, didn't get it then, and may still not get it. Listen, if someone is offended by something and it doesn't offend you, you can't say that, well, you can't be offended by it. That's their perception, their decision. Now we've reached a point where the Aunt Jemima brand is going to be changing the name and what they're going to come up with, how they're going to do it, still not made public yet. If it's offensive to someone, it is, again, their perception. I don't care if on a vote of 1,000 people, they are the only vote that says it's offensive, they're entitled to say it's offensive. This is a private company. It's entitled to change its mind and direction at any point. Many were saying, you've had this for 130 years. It should have been changed long before now, but it hadn't been. Now it is. I'd say that's progress. I personally, but again, being a white boy growing up in the South, I never looked at the Aunt Jemima brand as being tied to slavery and the antebellum era of Gone with the Wind type thing and so forth that they're also dissing now. But I couldn't say the same for young blacks raised in the South that they didn't see it differently. I've never seen a breakout showing out of the racial breakout which race buys Aunt Jemima syrup or praises it more. It doesn't make any difference when you get down to it. If it's offensive to someone, it's offensive. Even to the point of our U.S. flag. If out of 1,000 surveyed, like I said a moment ago, only one says the flag's offensive, it's offensive to them. I can't do anything about it. That's their opinion. I don't consider the flag offensive. In this case, I'm going to give the value of the argument to those who say they're offended. It was never intended. Let me correct that. I don't know what the original intent was, but I've never heard the argument of it being offensive until recently, although it has been underway for some time. To the same extent of the Washington Redskins. I never looked at them naming it Redskins to be demeaning against American Indians. I mean, why would you name your team? You want to talk about warriors on the field and so forth. You're not trying to pick a symbol that would demean your team or anything, but it worked out that way with current political correctness. Current political correctness does have some value. Sometimes we're beat over the head with it, and I think sometimes it's abused. But there are times it has value. We now have, of course, whether or not you considered the Aunt Jemima brand was a flashback to slavery or demeaning, it's going away. It'll be part of history again that's changing. But this is a private company. They have the right to do it. And maybe it is time for them as a private company to do that. But again, the most recent bottles don't show the image they had originally as far as a picture on it. Maybe you'll discuss it the next morning you're having syrup with your pancakes or whatever. It's a worthy discussion. We'll take a break. We'll come back and new news about the virus.
You can follow Larry on Larry Connors USA Facebook. Larry Connors USA Facebook.
is Larry Connors USA.
Larry Connors USA.
Well, we're, of course, still in the process of opening our nation, and some areas faster than others as we move past the COVID scare, and yet we have to acknowledge it might still exist. And we get word from the World Health Organization, if you want to trust them, after the debacle dealing with China and telling us it's a danger or not, parroting China at the time, that, oh, no concern, and then suddenly we realize it was. Now the World Health Organization director is cheering trial results of a drug underway and being tested at the University of Oxford. They say it's also reduced deaths in those patients on oxygen by one-fifth, and apparently is helping those who didn't need a ventilator necessarily if they got the drug in time. We'll see. I'm not going to bother getting into it. Of course, if President Trump had announced the same information, you know it would be challenged immediately. Oh, and Dr. Anthony Fauci says, okay, you want to play Major League Baseball, all right. He said, I don't know how this is going to go. He said, if you're going to have baseball, he said, I would try to keep it in the core summer months, end it not the way we play the World Series until the end of October when it's cold. I would avoid that. He said, this virus continues fooling us. So now he's saying, if you're going to have baseball, make sure you're done with the season entirely before you get to fall in the colder weather. You don't know what to believe anymore, do you? I don't. I know some folks who are still basically locked down in their home. They are so frightened to go outside. That's their approach. And if they want to do that, that's fine. But I'm at a point where I've been out. I mean, this last Sunday, out with some of the other Harley riders and going into different little haunts, bars. I'll be direct. We're at bars. Not drinking while we're motorcycling, but, you know, maybe enjoying just company and so forth. And there was no social distancing. There's a place over in the along the river in Grafton that also jammed with folks the other day. But we are seeing some cases spike in various states. Florida had been seeing a spike. And in fact, they narrowed it down on one case, at least 16 that went to a particular bar earlier this month, 16 customers testing positive and 7 employees. And one of those testing positive, a 40-year-old, said, well, went out to this pub in Jacksonville Beach. After months of social distancing, we've done everything the right way, and the first night we go out, Murphy's Law, I guess. The only thing we have in common is that one night in that bar, that one night. So they had to close down that particular lounge and another one and others nearby. Texas has also seen a spike. They had yesterday 2,622 new infections, the highest daily total yet. And the Texas governor says, I think we have narrowed this one down. And this is very similar to what you might see, as we heard from the story in Jacksonville, Florida, and what we might see elsewhere around the nation. As the governor said, people under 30 who are going to bar-type settings have become a driving factor behind the growing number of virus cases in Texas. Yep, same stories in Jacksonville. Maybe the same story is going to be replicating elsewhere across the nation. Folks are getting out. They're forgetting social distancing. They're just enjoying things. They're not wearing masks. So they are worried about a spike, and whether or not it becomes a dire situation would depend on the person getting it and how they can handle it. Of course, the other part of this story, that while the governor in Texas is pointing out those under 30 going to the bar type settings, if they get it, and then they have parents that might have some health immune issue, or grandparents, or older brothers and sisters who might have, or even younger, who have some deficiency, that then they pick it up and it might endanger them more, and they were never at the bar. I don't think we're all going to go back to wearing masks again. I still wear it occasionally if I go into a major grocery store, partly for my protection and partly to make others around me feel at ease. And yes, bar-type settings induce a lot of things. We all know that. I mean, you get in a bar, you kind of, yeah, you know, having fun, getting up close. And if you're drinking Corona beer, which I ordered one the other day, and I had several people look at me. I said, well, it's either going to fight it off or I'll get it right now. No, 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 Corona beer has nothing to do with the virus. But you order one and watch reaction. Hey, I appreciate, as always, you joining us and letting your friends and neighbors know about it. You missed any part of this program, this hour, or the previous hour, don't forget Larry Connors USA Facebook. Larry Connors USA Facebook. You can pull up previous programs, listen to them, or send them on to friends to share them. And I do appreciate it when you share. Book it on your calendar for tomorrow. We'll be back. Book it.
This is Larry Connors USA.
Larry Connors USA.
Thank you for listening to Larry Connors USA. Please listen to previous and future podcasts.